I have the doubt that kept my forefathers out. Can I make it past the acres? Will my heart be sure when I stand at the door? Will I need my eyes to see?
Expectation management is the process of helping people understand what they are about to experience and what they will receive from that experience. It's what a nurse does when she tells a child this might hurt as she prepares to administer an injection. It's also what happens when a football coach tells his team, "We have some hard days ahead in summer training, but you'll thank me when we're in the playoffs." The meaning in both cases is that something unpleasant is about to happen, but there is a reward at the end of the process, provided the child or the football team do what is required of them. The child must hold still and endure the shot, after which she will enjoy a lollipop and, hopefully, improved health. The football team must work hard at practice, obey the team rules, and play their best at each game. If they do that, then the physical, mental, and emotional hardships they endure will earn them a winning record and a shot at a championship. When you think about it, life is one long exercise in expectation management. It's largely the management of pain and suffering, our own, or the pain and suffering of someone else on our behalf. My parents, for example, struggled to make sure we received a good education. Their sacrifices were transparent to us, but we reaped the benefits. It grieved and angered them when we did not demonstrate appreciation for their sacrifices. A simple thank you or a kiss and a hug would be sufficient for them to know we realized they were the source of all we had, especially those special things like birthday parties and family vacations. It was a different story whenever we allowed our expectations to metastasize into a sense of entitlement. That's when painful episodes erupted that damaged our relationships. If we acknowledged our guilt and submitted to discipline, we might receive mercy. But even if not, the relationship with our parents would be restored. If we responded in anger, the situation could escalate to the point of unbearable consequences. An angry response most likely would not have been aimed at the offending parent, of course. That would be too dangerous. My brother and I had our passive-aggressive ways of letting the whole family know our feelings. On one occasion, when my father disciplined my brother, he decided to punish Dad by slashing the tires of my bicycle. Perhaps it made sense to a child of five, just as burning down one's own neighborhood in response to a disagreeable court ruling might make sense to a mob thinking with their emotions rather than their minds. No amount of expectation management can diffuse that type of situation. This is an unpleasant aspect of our fallen human nature. Even if expectation management is done properly, we tend to disregard the responsibilities assigned to us and the boundaries we are not to cross. When the inevitable consequences come upon us, we would rather shift the blame to someone else than acknowledge our own shortcomings, just as our first ancestors did in the Garden of Eden. When the authority over us refuses to accept our lame excuses, we resort to sullen rage and rebellion. Depending on the circumstances, that type of response could result in a long prison sentence, or perhaps a family feud, or maybe even a church split. This is what happens when we choose any path other than the path of humility. One wonders what might have happened to Korah and his fellow rebels had they accepted the consequences of their disobedience rather than questioned the leadership of Moses and Aaron. They were angry that God had not come through with his promise to take them into the land of milk and honey. But they might not have considered that his promise depended on their trust in and obedience to him. The whole nation of Israel failed in that responsibility when they gave in to fear and decided they could never defeat the inhabitants of the Promised Land. It was their fault, not God's, that he decreed their generation would die in the desert because of their unbelief and disobedience. It seems that Korah, Dathan, and Abiram considered this unfortunate turn of events as a failing of Moses' leadership rather than the result of their own failures. That, at least, is what comes out in their bitter accusation. Now, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram rose up against Moses and took 250 men from the children of Israel, men of renown who had been appointed to the council. They assembled against Moses and Aaron. They said to them, "You've gone too far. All the community is holy, all of them, and Adonai is with them. Then why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of Adonai? Isn't it enough that you brought us from a land flowing with milk and honey, only to kill us in the wilderness? And now you would lord it over us. What's more, you haven't brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards." These charges reveal the true heart attitudes of these men and their followers. God established his expectations when he said, "Obey my voice, and I will be your God to you, and you will be my people. Walk in all the ways that I command you, that it may go well with you." Sadly, what these rebels heard was, "I'm going to give you an easy life in a good land if you just follow me." There's a large expectation gap between "follow me and I will give you an easy life" and "walk in all the ways that I command you." One expectation assumes blessing without obedience. Those who hold that expectation often hold a sense of entitlement that places conditions on their loyalty to the Almighty. As long as he shapes their circumstances to please them, they remain in his camp. The other type of expectation requires trust demonstrated by obedience. Those with that type of expectation identify with their God in a way that transcends unpleasant circumstances and takes their loyalty off the auction block. They are not in covenant because of what they can get out of it, but because of who has brought them into it. Suffering and adversity for such people makes them trust him more. This is the distinction we see between Korah and Moses. It seems that Korah did not have an intimate relationship with the Almighty. Moses did, which is why he chose to appeal humbly to God rather than directly confront the rebels. Had this incident occurred half a century earlier, Moses might have been the one to rebel. When he, as prince of Egypt, sought to avenge the wrongs done to his people, he may well have been setting himself up as leader of a slave revolt. His expectations as a young man seem to have been leading the Hebrews into a good life where they would no longer be oppressed, even if the path to that good life required murder and oppression of others along the way. That's the Moses who was not suitable to be a mediator between an angry God and a stiff-necked people. It took 40 years of exile in the backside of the desert to transform that angry Moses into the humble Moses who stood between the expectations of the Redeemer and the demands of the redeemed. This gets to another aspect of expectation management. It doesn't mean complete knowledge. God said, "Obey me and it will go well with you." He didn't explain all the trials that their obedience would entail, much though the people would have liked him to do so. When our expectations are on what he promises to provide rather than on him, adversity can make us so angry we lash out at the most convenient target. That's what brings bitter division to the family of God. The way of unity is the way that says, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life."
Oh, Yah, break my heart that I will start to trust you and believe. To trust you.